confessed. Innate, original, eternal, natural love of the heart. Bhakti yoga. Yoga means to reconnect, to harmonize, to unite. Bhakti yoga is the path by which we reconnect to that spiritual essence within ourselves, that love, personal love. When Srila Prabhupada was asked by a challenging news reporter, "What do you hope to get from chanting Hare Krishna? What is your goal?" And he said, "Our goal is to chant Hare Krishna." Because in bhakti, the goal and the means to achieve the goal are the same. Our goal is to awaken that inherent love that is within. And the means to awaken that love is by orienting every aspect of our life in the spirit of love. This beautiful mantra and all these names of God, they're special. Could everyone hear? Special effects, I think. But can you hear?
Yes.
This mantra is Kali Kale Navamu Krishna Avatar. That the supreme, all attractive object of all love, who some people call God, the Absolute Truth, Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, has actually incarnated within these sound vibrations. Om Pavitra Pavitrova, that we become what we associate with. If we put an iron rod in fire, it will certainly, in due course of time, become as red and hot as fire. And if you say it's still an iron rod, then someone will say, then touch it. And it's identical to touching fire because of its association with fire. Put the same iron rod in ice, in course of time it will be as cold as ice. So we very much become what we associate with. Every mother and father knows how important it is for their children to be with nice people. Just like when I was a teenager, my mother and father weren't very happy when I was associating with Gary. That's my friend Gary.
I missed that. Tell me again.
Huh?
I missed that part.
It was meant to be. Did everyone? everyone else get it? Gary, did you hear that part? I was hoping you wouldn't. I guess I aimed it a little off. But actually, Gary was the nicest friend. But he didn't look so nice. In my parents' calculation, he had long hair and beard and everything. She said, what are you doing with people like this? I said, they're really nice. And the one friend that we had that really looked clean and gentle and always talked really polite with my parents, I'm not going to mention his name, my mother and father would say, this is the person, you should make more friends like this. But he's the one that led us all into the most unspeakable situations. Yes? He was like an undercover counterculture agent or something. Agents that would try to make friends with you and get you to sell them something and then arrest you. He was like the opposite. He was like the most straight, gentle, conventional, parent-acceptable person. Behind the scenes, us little guys with long hair and beards, he was leading us toward all these other things. Do you remember, Gary? Anyways, he was a nice person. He was just associated with other people. But the principle is that if you're a parent, if your children are associating with drug addicts, then you're very worried. Because it's a reality. What we associate and who we associate with, we become like that. And that's why the foundational principle of spiritual practice is satsang. Choosing to associate with people who enlighten us, who bring us closer to God, who encourage, inspire us with the faith by which we can follow a spiritual path. Because following a true spiritual path means we have to make, you know, serious choices to go against the grain of what much of what society is promoting. Society is promoting very much the more you have to accumulate, to possess, the happier you'll be. Our Guru Srila Prabhupada used to say, people are addicted to unnecessary necessities. In order to get our wealth, people really present things that are totally unnecessary as things that are really necessary for us. If you use this toothpaste, then every time you smile, people are going to be enamored by it. By you. Yes? Now, you may not be thinking that grossly, but it's on a subtle level. Advertising is very much directed by some of the deepest, most highly paid psychiatrists and psychologists to somehow or other affect our subconscious. Yes? To convince us. And therefore, people get full of greed. And according to who we associate with, we think You know, power is very, very important. According to what we associate with, even our own religion or spiritual path, which has the specific purpose of rising us above our egos. The purpose of spirituality is really to remove our egos so that we can actually see who we really are. The ego is like a cloud that covers the sun of who we really are. If we just uncover the soul, we realize I'm eternal. I'm a part of God. And God's all beautiful. And being a part of God, that makes me all beautiful. And there's nothing to be arrogant about because everyone's a part of God. So everyone's all beautiful. Our dear God sister in London, she was dying of cancer. She was paralyzed from the waist down, a mother of five children, an activist her whole life. And I remember she was saying, she was on her deathbed. She said, physically, I'm nothing what I used to be. And she was about to die. But she said, but I feel so happy and so fortunate and so infinitely relevant to the world because Krishna loves me. And there's nothing that can take that love away from me. Not even death. Then she smiled even bigger. And she said, but I can't think myself better than anyone. Because Krishna loves everyone. So everyone has infinite relevance. That's who we are. When we actually understand the joy, the treasure, the happiness, the love of our souls, we live with compassion. And we're just too full. We're just too wealthy with the treasure of that inner gratitude and joy. There's nothing to be envious about in this world. No one can possibly have anything more. And there's nothing to be arrogant about because everyone has the same thing. On the spiritual level, there's nothing to be condescending and there's nothing to be depressed about or envious or jealous. That's real wealth. And this is what every great spiritual teacher has been directing us to throughout history. If we associate with people who are using spiritual principles and religion not as a means of overcoming our ego, but as a weapon of the ego, then it has a completely opposite effect. And the Bhagavad Gita tells what is religion is taken to be irreligion, and what is taken to be irreligion is religion. It's something like that. But a true seeker is called Saragrahi. That means one who is seeking the essence. And we are speaking about this essence. Because in the life we live, there's so many uncertainties. I often tell the story, it's from this book, The Journey Home. I was sitting on the bank of the Ganga, or the river Ganges, at the place where the Ganges meets the Saraswati and the Yamuna at Prayag. It's actually the place of Kumbh Mela. There, the was a hawk. It was flying overhead. Now, it was a summer day. It was probably about 110 degrees, and it was noon. Now, May, no one in India sits on a riverbank all alone at noon in the summer. Single human being anywhere in sight. And I was just thinking to myself, so fortunate I'm here in this very holy place, and I was getting burnt by the sun, but I was thinking, I'm so happy. Because I always wanted to go there. And happiness is not a matter of the physical condition of the body, it's a matter of the heart. I was just so grateful and happy to be there. But the sun and everything, it didn't make much difference to me. It was like a little detail. But then I saw this hawk above me. And he was the only other person around. And he looked real hungry. Really hungry. And he was gazing down with yellow eyes. And his claws were going back and forth like they were really aggressively about to attack. And I looked at his beak. It was curved and pointed and sharp. And I was thinking, subjectively, he's the only other person around for me. But objectively, I'm the only other person around for him. So he came lower and lower and lower until he was just a few feet above my head. And he dove in the water. And he went underwater. And while he was underwater, I saw the splashing and splashing. There was something going on down there. He emerged from the water with a fish in his claws. And that fish was about 1 foot long. And it was just maybe 5 yards in front of me. And I saw the fish's eyes. And that little fish looked so completely disoriented and confused as he was brought higher and higher into the sky with the hawk. And I was thinking, just like any of us, that fish was just going around its day like any other day, probably. Swimming upstream, swimming downstream, swimming across stream. May have been with his boyfriend or girlfriend. I still don't know how to tell the difference. But you know, things are quite relative. Because fish probably can't tell the difference between male and female humans. But they can instantly understand who's a male or female fish. But anyways, that fish was probably swimming around with his or her partner, maybe with children or grandchildren, or maybe with friends. Looking for food and playing and so many things, just like any other day. In the Ganges, such a fortunate place to be living. Suddenly, at the least expected moment, the hawk of fate ripped it out. I was thinking, we read about it every day. Seen it, we've experienced it. It's reality. Padam padam yadvi padam nivadesham. At any step in this world, something could happen. Just yesterday, I was walking through the Joshua Tree desert. And it was early morning. The sun was just rising. It was so nice. I saw these little rabbits jumping around and these little roadrunners running. And I was just thinking, this is like paradise. So quiet. And then I meet my dear brother Shamsundar. He saw me walking around. He said, whenever you go around something, you should make noise. I said, it's so quiet, why should I make noise? He said, because there's rattlesnakes. So that made me really happy when I heard that. We should actually, be taking shelter of God, not in fear, but in love, yes? Because if we're taking shelter of the comforts of this world, we're destined to suffer. Because there's all different varieties of rattlesnakes in this world. Sometimes they come in human forms. Sometimes they come in our health, destiny, in hawks. But we should take life seriously. It doesn't mean to be afraid. It means to be realistic. Everything perishes. When we find our shelter in the perishable things of this world, our happiness and our shelter will perish. The true opportunity of life is to take shelter of the imperishable, foundational joy and love that is within us. It's God's love. And that love is something very deep and very personal. Srimad Bhagavatam explains when our hearts are awakened from our egoistic slumber and we realize our true soul, our true living force, who we really are, then we will feel God's love, what we call Krishna, Krishna's love, in a way that we are the most loved. Ourself specially, intimately, most loved. That's a personal feeling. But then we also understand that everyone is experiencing that who opens their hearts to receive it. So association is really important because when there's so many distractions and there's so many alternatives, and there's so many ways of implicating and complicating our lives, even in the simplest things, the human mind complicates the simplest thing. And actually, when a self-realized soul, a true yogi, looks at what's going on in the world, it's like, whether it's the power, politicians and generals of militaries and the biggest industrialists who are controlling the economy. When the little yogis look at it, sitting on their little grass mat, they think these are just a bunch of little immature children just playing with all kinds of silly toys. And they're so attached to them, fighting over them and killing each other. You see, if you have a very superficial, empty experience of material happiness within your own mind, because we're looking for something substantial, looking for them in fleeting experiences and fleeting relationships, then we take them really seriously. And then a little grain of sand looks like a mountain to us. Yes? How can I overcome this? It's so beyond me. But it's just a grain of sand. How can I give up this? It's so precious. How can I cross over this? It's so impossible. Well, when we have inner enlightenment, we see it for what it is. It's a grain of sand. And we honor it as a grain of sand, and we use it properly, you know, accordingly, and we respect it. Yoga means to harmonize. To harmonize the body. Asanas is a really wonderful, wonderful way of harmonizing all the different aspects of the body with each other. You see what happens when the kidneys decide, I'm the most important part of the body. Every other part of the body should recognize and respect and surrender to me. And then the heart is thinking the same thing. And the liver is thinking, you will all die without me. And the brain is thinking, you will all be lost without me. And the feet are saying, you can't go anywhere without me. And the eyes are saying, without me, you are blind and destined for darkness. If all those different organs of the body, you know, have their false egos and start thinking themselves disconnected from other parts, what happens is it's a really diseased body. A healthy body is when every organ and every limb recognizes and appreciates the value of what everyone else is doing. And your welfare is my welfare. The brain, the heart, the lungs, they all know that the kidney's welfare is my welfare. And the kidney's feeling the same way. I'm not going to get into an anatomy class too much, but I think you understand that when the body is in when every part of the body is in harmony with every other part, it's a healthy body. And then yoga takes us beyond that. When the body is in harmony with the mind, and the mind is in harmony with the self, with the soul, Atma. And then the soul becomes in harmony with the Supreme Soul, the origin, or God, Krishna. If you water the root of a tree, naturally all that water goes through every part of the tree. When we learn to love God, who's the source of everything and everyone, and the all-attractive object of everyone's love, and the Supreme Lover. When we feel that love, and we love, then naturally that love will extend in a spirit of compassion to everyone. It's inclusive. So yoga actually brings harmony between people. When we make our own harmony with ourselves, we're naturally in harmony with other people. And people are not limited to humans. Where, of course, life is a part of God. And the dogs and the cats and the cows and the birds and the insects, the trees. And yoga, once that harmony is established, we also understand how to live in harmony with nature, with the environment, with the ecology. From the perspective of bhakti, that harmony is based on the principle of finding a higher experience than I, me, and mine. And experiencing how us and me, we are all connected to that same source. To Krishna. To Bhagavan. And then we naturally live in harmony. Harmony means we're all served. Our joy is to serve each other. We've all heard the saying, in giving you receive. But that's a very, very deep philosophical principle. That's the very basis of bhakti. That's the very essence of the nature of life. In giving, we receive. Until we understand the value of seva, unconditional, unselfish service based on love, based on compassion, we've missed the entire point of life. Just being bounced around here and there by one distraction after another. I, me, and mine. Like those little children building their castles in the sand. And the adults are saying, they build castles in the sand. But then when the dusk approaches and the tide rises, sees the tide coming in, and he spent his whole day making these incredible castles and even made canals to protect any dangers from the ocean. And for a while, the canals work. I've watched children. I've done it myself. The ocean is coming in, and it fills up the canal, and you have the canal directing the water, and it's working, it works for some time, and then the next wave, actually a little of the castle is getting disturbed, and the child is frantically trying to build walls and trying to do something to protect its treasure of life, until that faithful moment, that inevitable destiny. Destiny of earth. That wave comes in and then back into the ocean, and all that's left is the raw ingredients of sand. The whole day's labor is gone forever. The child's crying and the parents are laughing, drinking whatever they're drinking. I was just talking about you. Is what can never be taken away from us. That's the love, the peace, the compassion, the happiness that's within ourselves. And through our body, and through our mind, and through our wealth, and through our resources, and through our intelligence, and through our skills, the joy of life is when we use these things to give, to serve. Then we're liberated, we're free, beyond birth, beyond death, beyond heat and cold and success and failure and honor and dishonor and victory and defeat. We shouldn't get caught up in this stuff. We should have our anchor in that higher experience. Is very much inspired by satsang, by the association of people who are there, who are sharing that purpose with us. And this is the beauty of Bhakti Fest. Sri Raji, we're very grateful to you. Every year, it's really blissful. At least whenever I see it. But there was a great saying by Divinota. He was one of the greatest yogis that ever lived. The most renowned Babaji, Swami, sadhus would come to him for blessings and guidance and wisdom. And he was a married man, and he had 10 children. And his wife, Bhagavati, was just as saintly as him. And they had homes, several homes. And he worked as a magistrate for the government. But whatever he did, it was from that place in his heart that he connected to. And he wrote a very beautiful line in his poetry. He wrote thousands of songs and prayers, dozens of books. And they're sung today all over the world. He wrote, "My beloved Lord, the difficult even the pains that I have to endure in serving you are the greatest pleasures of my life." And the greatest service we can do for Krishna is being a spirit and instrument of his compassion for others, to help others. Just like Rupa Raghunathji, last night he received the Humanitarian of the Year Award from Bhakti Fest. Bhakti Vinod Thakur also, like, where there's the greatest necessity, there's the greatest opportunity to serve and show our love. And yoga, to harmonize. To serve the body, to serve them, you know, through providing the necessities and shelters the body needs, the tools, to serve the mind by giving encouragement, appreciation, and value to a person's life, and ultimately to serve the soul by giving the soul that deep connection to its own true eternal identity. To find the joy of that. That is the festival of Bhakti. So let us take this spirit and celebrate Bhakti Fest every moment, every day, wherever we are.